law school, baby. It all starts here.
Caleb Parsons is 6'9 swingman. You can shoot the three.
This is why you don't teach lessons.
Exactly.
You basketball fans are terrible and shameful. Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Saturday, March 21st, 2009. It's a very special show. We're all gathered here in my apartment on a Friday night, now Saturday morning. We've just finished watching some March Madness, and we decided to bring you, the loyal listeners, another podcast. So I'm Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports. And joining me in my place of residence are
Kyle Maestri, baseball beat writer.
Mike McCall, football beat writer and columnist.
Basketball beat writer, Mike Ferdinando.
All right, before we get going to some other stuff, Kyle had some corrections from our NCAA tournament marathon podcast that he wanted to make. So, Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah, when you go 100 minutes and you start at 2 o'clock in the morning, some stuff's bound to go wrong. But I wanted to apologize for the misinformation that we fed you guys. A couple things that I caught were, in my intro, when I was bragging about my Vermont upset pick, that was 2005, not 2003. At one point, I said Texas A&M was not a tournament team. Then I proceeded to pick them against BYU in the tournament. So Texas A&M, most certainly in the field. I couldn't remember the player on Utah State's name. I said perhaps Robert. And his name is, in fact, Gary Wilkinson. And Mike DeFerdinando, our boy over here, he mistakenly called John Diebler, Eric Diebler, for Ohio State. But they were all minor things, you know, we were covering 65 teams. Gets a little rough, you know, gets a little congested in the old noggin.
And now that you've already made all your picks for your brackets and they're locked and you could have possibly been misled by our information, you know, we're sorry.
I'd like to apologize for that, too.
All right, before we move on to our bracket challenge and our NCAA picks, I've been encouraged to say that our podcast started back early February, basically just me and my MacBook with GarageBand, you know, no professional equipment or anything. And the recently started Deadspin podcast over at the popular sports blog, deadspin.com, just recently started a podcast, and it sounds terrible. It sounds worse than us. I'm a college kid, have no professional training. I'm doing this as part of my other job. And there you go, Deadspin. We still sound better than you.
You are far worse than us. I'm a loyal reader and a fan, but you are far worse than us. Than
I don't know if we plugged this, or we certainly haven't plugged it enough. Adam also composed and played the intro music for our podcast and then splices the clips in. And he tries to, you know, keep them fresh for you guys out there. So he's done a great job with this. And you go check out the Deadspin podcast. I'm sure you'll agree with us.
All right. Well, now that I'm feeling thoroughly appreciated here, let's move on. Let's talk about our bracket challenge. After the first round of play, we have some results in. Bracket named Domination Over You is currently tied for first with two other people. I'd like to say that's my buddy Pedro. So good job, Pedro. You're tied with two other people with 27 out of 32 picks correct. That's going to keep going throughout the weekend. The picks will become more valuable, more points as the rounds go along. So let's go around here. How are our brackets doing, guys?
Before I get into that, I just wanted to say, your unwavering way that you refer to Pedro is always my buddy Pedro. I've heard you drop his name no less than 15 times. It's never my friend Pedro or my friend I went to high school with Pedro or Pedro in a surname. It's just my buddy Pedro every single time. So if we ever have him on the podcast or something like that, I want him referred to as my buddy Pedro at all times. And now that I'm done with that, I don't want to brag on myself, but I was told I had the best bracket so far out of the Alligator guys. So as far as points-wise and possible points, which I'm pleased with. Those of you listening out there may have remembered my picks are probably thinking, how is that possible? Didn't you have Wake in the Final Four? Well, I had a little panic attack at 4 o'clock in the morning, Thursday night, in which I scrapped a lot of my bracket. I went back and changed some things. I only had Wake going into the Sweet 16, so that's as far as they went for me and as far as they hurt me. I only lost two Sweet 16 teams. One was Wake, one was FSU. I think most people had those two, so it might not hurt me too bad. Overall, I'm pleased with how I did. I'm first in one of our money leagues also. So, you know, we'll see what happens in later rounds. The Flyers got to carry me. But all of you out there who picked up any knowledge on the Flyers, be proud of yourselves that you followed Kyle on that one.
Myself included, actually. You helped me out with your passionate love of the Dayton Flyers on last time's podcast. I'd like to correct that, though. Opinions editor Dan Seco, not in sports, but for the Alligator. He is actually the highest-ranked Alligator employee. on our thing. And in sports copy, copy desk chief Jack Benj is two places ahead of you. So,
all right. What's it? What's the? Are there possible points both ahead too? I know
actually,
Dan's
you technically you're ahead of him on the list I'm looking at. You're behind him, but you have more possible points and the same number of correct points.
So. What do we think on that? I think possible points more important than actual points when you're looking at projecting who's going to win and who has a better chance.
I think you just got to look at the champ. I mean, the champion is really all that matters.
Right, the champion's
we're all going to be like in the ballpark. So if you've got the same champion, then you got to start looking at where you're going to pick up things here and there. But if you've got different champions, I mean, that's what it's all going to come down to. All
right. So while we're at it, McCall, how's your bracket doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I wasn't here last week, but I've got 3-1 seeds, Louisville, Connecticut, and UNC in the Final Four, and then Villanova. I also had a late night change of heart. I had UCLA in the Final Four, which was shaky, but I was happy with it. I don't know why. And then I woke up in the middle of the night and had like a fever and sweats. And everything. I changed it to Villanova. Just sitting here, of course, I have UNC winning it all over Connecticut. I think UNC winning it all is pretty non-negotiable. Sorry, guys. But then just sitting here looking at my bracket, I'm a little upset with myself. I just realized I have every single 2-seed losing in the Sweet 16.
Ooh.
Yeah. I didn't think about it that way when I did it, but the odds of that happening just don't seem good to me right now. I've got Duke going down to Villanova, very possible. Oklahoma losing to Syracuse, I probably like Syracuse too much. Memphis losing to Missouri, I don't like Memphis at all, I'm happy with that. I had Michigan State losing to West Virginia, that's clearly not going to happen after the Mountaineers let me down.
I just want to say, I don't like the 2 seeds as a whole. I mean, I have Oklahoma in the championship game, so I obviously like Oklahoma, but the rest of the 2 seeds I don't really like, and I actually have them all going down in Sweet 16. I have Michigan State going down the round of 32 to USC next. But I think what I was saying before, too, is like you kind of get trapped into these things like, I can't have all the 2 seeds lose like this, and you change up your bracket. So I think it's actually good you didn't change your bracket.
Yeah.
So I think you should always look at a matchup-by-matchup basis and try to do the best you can with that.
It's like we talked about with the multiple choice test. When you look at it, you think, well, I have C and C, so the next answer can't be C.
You're bound to mess yourself up like that. So just, you know, trust your knowledge of the matchups, and I think you'll do a better job than going on probabilities and stuff like that. Like, I got trapped. I switched. I had Arizona beating Utah, then I actually changed it to Utah. Not because I thought the matchup changed, just because I thought, oh, everybody's picking Arizona, and those games never work out, so Utah's going to win. And that just wasn't the right thinking.
There's an element of strategy to that, too. I mean, if you're in a pool with people and you think everyone's picking one team, I mean, it's a risk, but if you think it's a 50-50 type game,
I guess,
it's worth
yeah.
it.
All right, Deaver, how's your bracket looking so far?
It's still solid. The Mountaineers broke my heart earlier today. Kyle and I had a pretty spirited debate while watching that game. Kyle, of course, with the Flyers. So we're hoping for a second-round loss for Dayton, but we'll see what happens. I had West Virginia Elite Eight, so that pretty much hurt me.
Yeah, me too. I share your pain.
I've disappointed myself. I drank the Tennessee Kool-Aid pretty hard. I guess they played well against Oklahoma State, but Byron Eaton somehow found his way to the basket. Shorts are 3 sizes too big, but what are you going
to
do?
To clarify, by drinking the Tennessee Kool-Aid pretty hard, he meant he had them winning one game.
Yeah.
So let's not get too hard. Don't be too hard on yourself.
In one of my early bracket drafts, I had Tennessee beating Pitt. I'll get to that. I'll cop to that right now. But I also have Xavier beating Pitt in the next round. So I just wasn't very high.
Well, we'll see. As Mike McCall was telling us all week when we were mocking other people previous to the tournament, if George Mason can go deep, you can't make fun of anybody's picks until
nothing
they happen.
Nothing is too ridiculous now. Except UNC losing.
That's why they call it March Madness. All right, speaking of my bracket, I'm doing all right. I missed 8, I believe. I'm like 24 of 32. 14 of my Sweet 16 teams are alive. I believed in Ohio State, and my boy Mark the Shark Titus, Club Trillion, did not work out for me.
Shanna's got that magic.
I had Wake Forest, as a lot of people did. A lot of people probably had Wake Forest going farther than I did. I just had them going to Sweet 16 and then losing. I've seen people with Wake Forest in their Final Four, so that was a huge upset.
I believe, I don't want to badmouth him if it's not true, I think our own Brian Steele had Wake Forest in the Final Four, so I think he took a hit there.
I think so, yeah, I believe that's correct. My other Sweet 16 team out is FSU, who dropped it to Wisconsin, a game that I think none of us said was even...
I like to apologize for that one, because on last week's podcast, we all said... The 1-12-5 where you don't want to pick the 12 seed is the Wisconsin game, so bad information on that.
All right, and I'm actually behind all of you in this room right now, so if you want to, in terms of standings, that's where I'm at. But I also have a sports editor, Evan Drexler, who could not be with us tonight, and since all of you out there who are in our bracket challenge are really up against him in terms of your prize money and everything, you'll want to know how he's doing. He has missed 9 so far. He's 23 for 32, but once again, 14 of his Sweet 16 teams are alive. Joining us in the studio right now, just walking in, my roommate, Corey Hill. Corey, who's your final four?
Pittsburgh, Connecticut, Syracuse, and Michigan State.
All right, there you go.
Michigan State.
Yeah.
Surprising pick.
Corey is also in our bracket challenge group. He is somewhere on the third of 3 pages right now.
Easy.
Along with our own Phil, Mr. Bracket Kegler. So
Mr. Brackets.
Yeah, Mr.
I
Brackets.
I don't know what the S signifies, but he's got more than one.
Mr. Brackets has proved to be anything but. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Before we move off that, I wanted to give my new final four because I completely revamped it.
Yeah, we're going to go around with that.
Okay, we're going to go around with that?
Go ahead.
I'll start. I changed... In my middle of the night panic, I saw a clip of Roy Williams talking really badly and like he was so down about Ty Lawson's ankle that I switched my UNC pick. I had them winning it all. I had them from the very beginning, so it was really hard for me to do, but I have Gonzaga knocking them off now. So my new Final Four looks like Louisville, UConn, Villanova, Oklahoma, with Louisville beating Oklahoma in the championship game. I also wanted to throw out there, since it's hard to tell from the list of results whose bracket is which. So my name is Super Flyers, of course. And drop your guys' names along with your bracket so maybe people can check it out.
Yeah, well, getting back to your point a minute ago, mine is Ty Law's Son.
Which is the best name I've seen. I hate to give you credit for anything, but Ty Law's Son, genius.
Yeah, that's an homage to my boy Ty Lawson, who I'm actually very happy about Roy Williams coming out and talking about his toe, like what Kyle just said, because I think that threw a lot of people off the track. I think a lot of people are going to pick UNC to win. I'm very happy that people aren't now. A lot of people like Kyle jumped off the wagon. And my take with Ty Lawson is I don't want to see him play against LSU. I really don't. I don't want to see him on the court. I want to see them rest him, get him as healthy as possible, let him play when it matters against Gonzaga, or even hold him out of that if you have to. But I'd rather see him play in that game. And get him back healthy eventually, I think they win the title.
All right, so who's your final four?
My final four, already said Louisville, Connecticut, Villanova, and UNC. I've got UNC over Connecticut.
All right. Deeper?
All right, well, my team name is a 6'9 swingman, which is in reference to Florida's own Chandler Parsons. You may have recognized him from the intro. But I also was down on UNC. I had them going to the Final Four, but I bumped them for Oklahoma, banking on the fact Ty Lawson's toe falls off or something down the road here. I have Louisville, UConn, Pitt, and Oklahoma with Louisville over Oklahoma in the finals.
All right, and I'm looking at... Finals. Sorry, I'm looking at Evan's bracket right now. I'm not looking at anything of my own.
Throw that one out.
I will later, actually. I have Louisville, Memphis, Pitt, and Syracuse. I have Louisville and Pitt moving on with Louisville winning it all. My bracket's name is Barry's Team. I would like to apologize to all of you for being so terribly uncreative. All of my creativity went to this wonderful intro music in this podcast. Evan's bracket is Michigan State, Memphis, Pitt, and UNC. He has Memphis and Pitt in the championship game with Pitt winning. So that's what you'll be looking forward to if you want all those fabulous prizes we're giving out. Nobody can win the $100 million from our bracket, by the way.
Yeah.
Shock and all, I'm sure.
I'm sure you guys are disappointed I didn't win because I promised to buy everybody a car. So.
I was excited about that. All right, so let's move on from there. Let's talk a little bit about what we saw in today's games and yesterday's games. We were all sitting around here a little bit earlier, just screaming at my television, yelling, screaming there was too much madness going on because of some of the late games that went into overtime. Kyle, what did you see this whole weekend that you liked?
Well, the most gratifying game for me, without question, was Dayton over West Virginia. You've heard me just, you know, go nuts over Dayton. And I was watching it with Deifer, my brother Brett, and Phil Kegler. And all three of them had West Virginia in the Elite Eight, so it made it that much sweeter. I got really emotionally invested, like a little surprisingly so. Like I hadn't been that emotionally invested in a college team in a while, so it was a good feeling. Chris Wright was absolutely incredible, 27 points, 10 rebounds. He ended up being the best player in that game. And you saw Dayton really play a lot of defense. And I was telling Dee for this, and I think he kind of agreed with me. You can see the mid-majors who are real basketball teams because they don't just rely on the three to be the neutralizer and they don't rely on playing a zone and hoping that they don't get torn up by the three. Dayton is a real physical team. They man up on you, and they only shot 10 three-pointers the whole game. They get to the rim, and they have athletes on that team. And they held West Virginia to 36% shooting from the field. They're a great defensive team. And part of the reason for that is since they're not taking so many threes, there's not as many long rebounds, which lead to transition baskets for the opposing team. So they're able to set up their defense a little more, their half-court defense, which is really so great, in my opinion. So that was definitely the most satisfying game for me. Most upsetting was FSU. I don't know how Wisconsin won. And I'll pass it over to McCall here.
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts pretty much, I was a little worried after yesterday. It's not that they were bad games. There's nothing. I mean, I'll admit, I was very spoiled last year. I was in Tampa covering the regional there. I got to see Ty Rogers' buzzer beater, Western Kentucky beating Drake. It was right in front of me. I got to see Siena whoop up on Vanderbilt. And I also got to see San Diego in a late shot to beat Connecticut, which was also outrageous. Mm-hmm. So those are my teams now, Western Kentucky and Siena. I feel like indebted to them. I have to cheer for them. I have to pick them. So I was very happy to see Western Kentucky play well last night, beat up on Illinois, to the chagrin of Alligator alum Nick Sicardi. And then tonight, I mean, for all, you know, yesterday we didn't have anything incredible happen. Today, the two games going on at the same time, Siena, Ohio State going into double overtime, and then Florida State, Wisconsin, both great endings, both fun. That Siena, Ohio State game was about as back and forth as you can get. There was none of that, like, I mean, if you watch the SEC championship game and you saw Tennessee and Mississippi State trying to give the ball back to each other at the end of that game with the messing up the inbounds passes, the five-second calls, the terrible pass back. I mean, everything was just awful in that game. And seeing the Siena-Ohio State game is exactly what you want in a close game. Each team's scoring. Each team's getting to the rim. They're hitting their threes. The only thing, like what Kyle was saying, was the defense was atrocious for Ohio State coming down. The 2 3-pointers that Siena hit, you can't leave a guy that open.
Yeah, I had a bigger problem with the first one than the second one because they needed a three to tie it. At least the second one, you didn't know where the ball was going to go because they could have got it into the paint and gotten a two for the tie. But the first one that they hit, I felt like they let the guy get way too good of a look from three, knowing that they needed a three to tie it.
The only thing I didn't like from today, CBS was a little hit and miss early on in the day. I mean, same thing happened yesterday where we had to sit and watch UNC Radford for half the game.
Yeah.
I'm a UNC fan. I don't want to watch UNC right now. CBS's goal should be, outside of regional preferences and everything, put the best game on television. Whatever is most interesting at the time to the general public, put that on TV. They did a better job of that tonight. I thought they handled the overtime crisis. I can't imagine being in the room when you have the Florida State game in overtime and the Siena game in double overtime, trying to switch back and forth. But those, we didn't miss anything important. They did a great job. But before that, I mean, I would just like to see them keep the best game on TV, not necessarily the highest seed on TV.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, and Deefer, what did you see that you liked? What didn't you like?
All right, well, first of all, on the other hand, I want to say CBS did a masterful job late tonight switching back and forth between the Ohio State game and the Florida State game. That was great. We didn't miss anything important, so way to go, CBS. My best game of the weekend, I guess, was VCU losing to UCLA. I was in a room full of people who were pulling for VCU, including Kyle.
Yeah.
I believe Kyle lost some money to one Mike McCall last night over that game.
I gave him points. It was a huge mistake on my part. I think I gave him 3 points, and they only won by one.
I robbed Mike McCall blind, if we're being honest.
Right, correction. All right. My most disappointing game has to be West Virginia Dayton. I had West Virginia going to the Elite Eight, and I had to listen to Kyle cheer victoriously for several hours this afternoon. I wanted to be pointed out that Kyle Macy has promised that if Dayton wins another game, he will buy Dayton gear.
Absolutely. I stick to that promise. Well, if they win one more game, they get in the Sweet 16 for me, Flyers gear. I'm going online, buying a shirt, hopefully a sweet hat. If they get to the Elite Eight. If they get to the Elite Eight, which means that's where I had them in the tournament, I'm buying a Chris Wright jersey.
Wow.
So I'm going that far.
That's
going
to be steep. You better start betting on Dayton right now.
Yeah.
To make enough money to buy that jersey.
I'll just keep betting with you. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Oh, okay.
I will say that Kyle was right about Dayton. I was completely wrong. I thought they were going to come in and have one good play in Chris Wright and be a joke. But they played team basketball. They had good players. They were very athletic, way more athletic than I anticipated them being. And I think that's the difference. They can play defense. They can play tough.
Were you a little bit more impressed because they went wire to wire? They led from, I believe it was like 4-3 until the very end of the game. And West Virginia did bring it close. They almost tied it a couple times. But it wasn't like they were down the whole game, fought back, made a run, and hit a buzzer beater. I mean, they led wire to wire, and they were clearly the dominant of the two teams, mostly,
yeah.
I would say.
Absolutely. Leading was important. The other thing that impressed me was they could get to the basket on a Big East team like West Virginia. I thought that said a lot.
Yeah, I'll admit I was the only sucker out of us four to go to our rock and roll history class today. So I was watching the Dayton West Virginia game on like GameCast update on my iTouch. And the one thing that struck me, I mean, it looked like anytime West Virginia did anything, now I was heavily invested in West Virginia because I've been in the Elite Eight. Anytime they scored, Dayton turned around and scored like within 10 seconds. It was ridiculous. Every single time Dayton answered. That's so important in a game like that. You keep momentum down. That's huge.
Yeah, that's probably why I'd say that may have been my most enjoyable game of the weekend so far. And possibly because I made that change late and because, you know, it came as a result of our podcast recording, which was very special to me. also possibly favorable, the performances of two 16-seed teams from Tennessee, my formerly home state, Chattanooga, you know. Didn't do great, but, you know, they were representing a little bit. But
didn't do great. They lost by 56 points.
They
possibly
were there,
57. They weren't there. They didn't show up. And not only did they not show up, they're from the Southern Conference, and we could have had Davidson instead of them. Instead of Davidson, we got the Chattanooga Mocs, and I couldn't be more upset about that.
Yeah, I will admit that it was a little frustrating to watch, but it was exciting to see, you know, I drove by that gym. I've been in that gym. You know, it was very exciting for me. And I also sent a text to my brother at one point during that game that just said, the Mocs have not scored in a very long time, which resulted in a text from him that said, oh, I thought my screen broke. It had been that long since they scored. But on an actual positive note, ETSU, East Tennessee State, played great today against Pitt. Like, the final score of that game doesn't even show how close that was. That was, what, 4 points up to the last couple of minutes or something like that?
Yeah, it was even closer than that. They led in the second half. And, mm-hmm. like, you know, maybe with 10 minutes left, ETSU, a tremendous showing. Can't say enough about that.
Yeah, I think that's something we were all pulling for, regardless of our brackets.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, a 16 seed will beat a 1 seed. I hope it happens soon, but maybe next year.
That's one of those things when people say get the 65 strongest teams instead of letting in the little conference champions. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say that in the last few days. I couldn't disagree more. I think not only the 1 seeds deserve some kind of an advantage, mm-hmm. you know, you should get to play kind of a weaker opposition in your first game. But also, I mean, it's got to happen before. If they're going to make that change, I don't want them to. You've got to let a 16 win before you do that. And once that happens, honestly, there's no way they're going to change it.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have the automatic qualifiers, I think. Those teams are the best, you know, or at least they won their conference tournaments. And that's part of Division I college basketball. They're all part of it. And that's what's so cool about the NCAA tournament is that it's all inclusive. Everybody gets a part of it. Every conference gets a part of it. Everybody has a chance to win their conference tournament and go to it. It's great, and you still have the 34 at-large bid, which is plenty. You're still getting good teams in there in the at-large.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And to move on to my most disappointing, it was probably UCLA-VCU. Mm. I picked VCU. I was sitting in the office after we put out the paper had been sent and all that stuff, and I'm sitting in the office watching VCU just ruin that game for themselves. Just, they were pressing, like, terribly. They weren't doing anything with it, and it was just, I mean, not to hate on Anthony Grant here, but bad coaching in that case, I thought.
I don't know. I felt like they just couldn't stop UCLA. They couldn't get that big stop that they needed. And Eric Maynor played great for VCU. Eric Maynor was incredible. I know he missed the last shot for them, but he put the team on their back, and he got to the line, and they were fouling Eric Maynor all the time, UCLA was, because they couldn't guard him straight up. Mm. But, you know, on the other end, they struggled a lot to keep UCLA off away from the rim and to keep him off the scoreboard late, and I think that's what kind of did them in.
All right, a little bit of that. All right, what else do we have to say about the bracket here? We've had an exciting couple of days coming in.
One thing I just want to say real quick, I mean, I wrote this in one of my columns. This is my favorite time of the sports year, easily. And college basketball is my fourth or fifth favorite sport, probably. I think college football is by far my favorite sport. But the fact that the ending of the college basketball season is so awesome, to me, is the main reason why college football needs a playoff. We talked about this last time I was on the podcast. I mean, this is like the most basic thing to me. Like, you get such a good ending with college basketball, where the college football ending is like hit or miss. You're not sure what's going to happen. You're not sure if you're going to have confidence in the team that won as like the team that you want to call the national champion.
College basketball is your fourth or fifth favorite sport? What do you have ahead
What's
of that?
I go college football and NFL easily, and I'm going to get ridiculed for this, but when tennis is good, tennis is great. I love tennis. You can make fun of me all you want for that.
I really need to make fun of you. It takes care of itself.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. And then also, like, baseball. The Braves haven't been good for a while, but, like, I'm a big baseball guy. Just the Braves have sucked lately, so that's why college football is either fourth or fifth to me. It's kind of a seasonal thing also, like, golf and tennis have their peaks and valleys, and the valleys are pretty low. But I'll admit, like, college basketball, nothing beats Duke Carolina for me. That's my favorite thing, Duke UNC. But other than that, like, I can get lost in a college basketball season and not really pay that much attention.
I'll agree with that. Actually, I didn't follow college basketball this season as closely, just, you know, on the national scale as closely as I have in the past. But, you know, it's like tournament time comes around, and even in a bad sense, everybody's an expert. Everywhere you go, you know, you can make conversation about brackets. I heard people talking on the bus about it, and nobody talks on the bus here in Gainesville, but I heard people talking about that.
You know, and people say the BCS is good for college football because it generates discussion. It generates half negative discussion, right? More than half negative discussion, where the bracket is fun. Everybody likes the bracket. My girlfriend filled out a bracket. I mean, everybody, she doesn't watch college basketball at all. It's all positive.
Yeah, and to point something out, I traveled to the UCF baseball game. UF played UCF on Wednesday, and I got sat next to some press people that wrote for, I think it was Inside Night was the name of the publication. I took it to be a Gator Country equivalent, I'm pretty sure. And I got into a very heated debate with a guy over Memphis because they're CUSA people. He had Memphis winning the whole thing. We got into it a little bit. But the point is, the end of the argument ended with, "We'll see. We'll see what happens." And that's what was nice. Like, we were on completely conflicting viewpoints, but at least we get to see. We get to see what happens in the tournament. And ultimately, maybe it's not the best representation. If they played the tournament multiple times, you'd have different outcomes. But you had some kind of medium to figure out who was right, at least for that one tournament. And that's what college football does not have.
Not even close.
Right. Yeah, not even close.
I want to talk a little bit more about that. You know, you get to see what happens because, you know, we're all invested in this in the sense that we have our brackets filled out. You know, we want to win. You know, our listeners want to win. You know, they want to beat us even. But we all have, like, a common thing. When we see ETSU closing up on Pitt, you know, that brings everybody together. You know, everybody loves the Cinderella. Everybody loves the underdog. There's something uniting about March Madness, I think, that you don't get with other playoffs.
Absolutely. I think college basketball kind of went to the next level. I've always been a college basketball fan. Went to the next level for me when I started following mid-major teams throughout the season and from the beginning of the year. Because it's nice when, like, you have your favorite Cinderellas coming into the tournament. You don't have to learn about them, like, after they win. I think since I've been following it even closer than I was before, it's really gone to the next level. And these Cinderella, the David versus Goliath matchups are what makes this tournament, definitely.
All right, do we have anything else to talk about with the tournament? I mean, just some random thoughts here from these past
This is
days.
About as random as it gets, and it probably doesn't make sense to anyone else, but I guess I was in a weird mood, and I was watching basketball today, and it struck me that when someone throws a ball to a referee and play a stop, watching them carry a basketball and just walk with it, holding it like a platter, like they're a waiter, is one of the most awkward things I've ever seen. I don't understand how you can hold a basketball, be walking across a wood floor, and not dribble it. That really struck me as odd today. It's like holding a tennis ball and not bouncing it. Holding a golf club at a driving range and not swinging it. I know it doesn't make any sense, but if you just look at that and tell me you don't think that looks weird.
I don't know. They're well-disciplined. So I remember watching a couple high school games. There was always that one ref that had something to prove. It's like, oh, man, I got my hands on the ball. It's a timeout dead ball situation. Like, let me take a behind-the-back dribble and rain a three. And he, like, airballs it. And it's just a shameful moment of, like, why'd you even try that? So I think they don't want to embarrass themselves, maybe. I mean, I don't know, but that's an interesting point.
It just looks awkward. I'm not saying they should do something differently. It just looks weird.
If you're a human and you get a basketball handed to you on a wood floor, you should want to dribble it. That's like nature at work.
It is discipline, you're right. They're trained for that. Yeah. Most people are trained.
I would like to say, though, that is about as random as it could have gotten.
You asked.
I did, yeah. Actually, I asked for it, I got it. You mentioned officiating, though. We had one call at the end of which game was it? And it's happened 2 years in a row now, the travel thing?
Oh, I got a few calls to talk about. The worst call of the weekend, by far, and Defer, I think, will back me up because we made a big stink about it while we were watching the games, was late in the Illinois-Western Kentucky game when Illinois was staging their comeback. There was an inbound play where Western Kentucky inbounded the ball. An Illinois player who was guarding the inbounder deflected the ball. It went straight down and hit the out-of-bounds line. It landed out-of-bounds. It had a little English on it, so it bounced back. And an Illinois player picked it up inbounds, like grabbed it inbounds. He then proceeded to step out-of-bounds. So Illinois, you know, was out-of-bounds twice and should have been Western Kentucky's ball. Somehow, it ended up being Illinois' ball going the other way while they were trying to stage this comeback. And it was the worst call I've ever seen. I was really appalled by it. It sucks that it had to work out that way. But the travel call, that was at the end of the Wisconsin game. Yeah. At the end of the Wisconsin game, the guy goes into the lane and he spin moves. And it looks to me like he took one step to plant himself, to plant his foot that he was going to make the move off of. The second step was the spin. He pivoted off of his plant foot and planted the spin where he changed directions. And the third step was he took a step through after that to the rim. And I thought it was a really bad call. 2 years ago, there was a Jeff Green no call where he won the game at the end, and this was at the end. This was the winning shot. He got, I think it was an and one. He got fouled too.
I believe it was.
Yeah. So both really critical calls, but at least that's fast paced. There was a little room for opinion. The Western Kentucky Illinois call is just unbelievable.
Right. The thing with the Illinois call is they got the call wrong. Clearly got it wrong. Clearly went off the Illinois player and out of bounds, and then back into bounds somehow. But they got the call right in the sense that you can't review whether or not that ball went out of bounds if they called it for Illinois. They can only review the clock. So there's nothing they could have done in that situation.
No, I don't want them to review it. I just want them to get it right the first time. I felt like that was such an obvious call, and it wasn't like a player in traffic moving fast where there's a little bit of, okay, maybe he didn't see it right. I just thought that was a very obvious call, and they missed it.
And the ref was standing directly in front of that ball because it wasn't inbound. So he was looking directly at the play.
All right. All right, yeah, let's talk real quick. What was the biggest surprise to you this weekend? What do you think in the first round?
Biggest surprise, man, this is a tough question for me because nothing. I'd say Wisconsin, I guess, would be the biggest surprise for me. I was also surprised in a bad way, unpleasantly surprised with Wake. I thought Cleveland State was a good team heading into it. I really liked them, and they were somebody who I thought I was going to pick before the bracket matchups came out. But when they got matched up with Wake, I believed in Wake. I thought Wake would at least put it together and win a couple games here. But they finished their season terrible, and they made no noise in the tournament. They get bounced. And not only did they get bounced by Cleveland State, they got spanked. They shouldn't. Cleveland State was way better than them tonight. And that was just embarrassing. I was surprised by the lack of passion that Wake Forest came out with. And it's just really a shock from a team that at one point, at some people, including me, for maybe a week or two there, thought they might have been the best team in the nation.
Yeah, I would agree with those things. I would also say I was watching the LSU-Butler game. I think it was the first game of the entire tournament to be broadcast. I was sitting in class watching it online. And the first couple of minutes of that, I could not have been more disappointed in Butler and more surprised because Butler hasn't lost in the first round since, what, 2000, right? Something like that. And they come out there and just get destroyed 9-0 within like a minute and a half. They look like a high school JV team against LSU, making them look like a Sweet 16 team, and it was just disgusting. But all right, let's go on. More disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Wake. I didn't know much about Cleveland State coming in, but there's no way that they're a better team than Wake Forest. They play. How is a team with Jeff Teague not going to beat Cleveland State?
Yeah, and at least keep it close. I mean, it wasn't even a game.
They got destroyed.
It was really reminiscent of the Siena Vanderbilt blowout last year. Same seeds, 13-4, and Siena wiped the floor with Vanderbilt, and same thing here. Cleveland State wiped the floor with Wake Forest.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go Wake too solely for the margin of victory. I mean, it's a shock whenever there's an upset, but the way that was an upset, it wasn't even a game, it wasn't a contest at all. But also, I mean, I got to say, I mean, I was pretty high on West Virginia, and then I wasn't that high on Dayton. I didn't listen to Mr. Maestri over here. So that surprised me that they lost, but at least they kept it close. It wasn't as bad as Wake.
I think Eastern Tennessee State's a good pick for most surprising, too. I mean, they did a great job staying in that game against Pitt. Deifer and I had a little conversation about what does it take for a 16 seed to feel like they did a good job, because winning a game, maybe not a realistic goal, and they should leave that tournament feeling like they did a great job.
All right. Were you more surprised by how slow Pitt came out or by how well ETSU did?
I'm going to be honest. We didn't get to watch the game because CBS kept us on West Virginia Dayton. Thank God. But no, it would have been nice when there's a potential one seed upset if they could have flashed over. But they have some regional obligations. I don't know exactly what goes into it, but I honestly didn't get to see it until the very end. So I'd say I was more surprised at Pitt, though. Pitt, clearly the more talented team. You just got to assert your will and just win and just blow them out.
Okay.
All right. Well, I have a surprise player. The point guard from Dayton. I think his name's London Johnson.
London Warren.
Okay.
Johnson? Is that where you were going with that? President Lyndon Johnson?
Anyway.
London Bridges?
I had no idea who this kid was before today. And I have to say, I couldn't have been more impressed with him. He threw some unbelievable passes in that game. He was great.
Yeah, if you watch that game, he only had like 3 or 4 points, maybe even 2 points. He wasn't scoring the ball at all. But he was throwing the dirtiest passes.
Absolutely.
And in transition, you could see the way he set up spacing was incredible. He was clearing lanes for guys just by where he was moving with the basketball. It was impressive. And you could see when he had to come out of the game for a little bit of foul trouble, their offense didn't run the same without him. So he was – Chris Wright obviously had the gaudy numbers, but London Warren, I thought, did a great – defense Wright did a great job throwing some nasty passes.
All right, do we have any other surprise players? I personally was surprised by the guy from Maryland. Was it Vasquez?
General Grievous.
Awesome. There was another guy from Maryland. I thought he had another good game. I can't remember exactly who that was.
Not exactly sure, but the surprise player of the tournament to this point, we can all agree on this once I say it. Memphis's his last name's Sally. Believe his first name's Robert. Sorry if I get that wrong. Everybody go to Google and look
right.
it up.
Okay.
But he averages 4 points a game coming into the tournament. Four. Think of on Florida who averages 4 points a game, okay? He dropped 35 in a relatively close game for them. Memphis looked like they might get upset in the first round by Cal State Northridge. And this guy hits 10 threes, drops 35 points. Not Tyreek Evans. This guy averaging 4 points a game. That's the most surprising thing to me.
Was that the Conference USA Sixth Man of the Year? Because I saw Memphis won Conference USA Sixth Man of the Year with the guy who averaged like 4 points.
I don't think so.
They had a guy that averaged four points that won Sixth Man of the Year.
I don't think so, but even if it is, that's an indictment on CUSA.
Yeah,
nobody
goes
6 deep, but come on.
That's exactly what happened. Memphis like cleaned up on awards with guys who like weren't even playing.
As a result of the team reputation is what you're saying. He had an incredible once-in-a-lifetime game.
Well, I was going to say, that's like the equivalent of Ray Shipman going off for like 35 points in a 40
think
game.
Think
about that.
Oh, man.
All right, we're back. We just had to take a 10-minute break. It's a first on the Alligator Sports Podcast. The first time I've actually had to do a little difficult editing work, I had to bleep a profanity, thanks to Mr. Maestri over here, who got a little bit passionate when discussing Mike McCall's excellent, freaking excellent, you could say, bracket name. Kyle, defend yourself.
Freaking genius, maybe?
Freaking genius.
I like to apologize to Adam. I created some extra work for me. It's never what I'm trying to do here. But it was bound to happen. You know, we keep it real here on the Alligator Sports Podcast. And it kind of slipped out. I couldn't pull it back. I tried. The words were already gone. And that was that. So
I enjoy this too because the listeners have no idea what we're talking about. To them, it's just like, oh, that never happened. So they don't really know what we're talking about here. But I feel like it probably happened because of this casual environment we got going here. We're in my living room.
Yeah, we're just in the living room talking sports. I mean, an F-bomb can't be dropped here or there. It just doesn't feel real. So,
all right, well, let's move on. D, for you with the NIT games here. Tell me about what the Gators have done.
I was lucky enough to enjoy some great NIT basketball today. missing out on some of the NCAA tournament games, but it was well worth it. Florida beat Miami rather handily tonight. They inexplicably came out to a 20-0 run, 20-2 run to start the game. They played the best game of the season, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Everyone was hitting their shots. Chandler Parsons is looking off guys and drilling threes in their face. I can't explain it, but it happened. Florida's marching on to the next round of the NIT. They'll play Penn State on Tuesday night at 9 p.m.
All right, two things I have here. First of all, talk about Chandler Parsons being out of the starting lineup. I mean, he's a 6'9" swingman who can shoot the three, as you're fond of saying. What does he bring
that
off
he
the
is.
Bench?
Donovan decided to start Irving Walker over Chandler Parsons in the Jacksonville game. That carried over to tonight's game against Miami. Chandler Parsons has actually played a lot better coming off the bench. Chandler says he doesn't matter where he plays, and he prefers to start, obviously. Mm. But I think this is something that actually works for him. Donovan said that he thinks he's maybe more comfortable. There's less pressure. I know no one wants to admit they're better off the bench, but I think this is definitely the case in Chandler Parsons' situation.
Defer just dropped some perfect analysis on the situation, but I just wanted to say, when you're watching the Gonzaga game, and Defer kind of agreed with me after watching Chandler Parsons play, is that there's a guy on Gonzaga who's a really good player, Micah Downs. I described him to Defer. I'm like, watch this guy play. He's a better Chandler Parsons. Like, if Chandler Parsons were good, he'd be Micah Downs. Because he's the same kind of build, maybe a little bit more muscular, but he's real tall, steps out, shoot the three, like a little athletic white, like athletic type white guy with a baby face a little bit, looks a little younger than he is. Could you confirm that after watching him play?
He looks exactly like Chandler Parsons, and I couldn't help but compare Chandler Parsons to Micah Downs for an entire evening tonight, so Kyle's absolutely correct.
All right, and then one more thing about the Gators and the NIT here. Do you feel like they're just playing better just because they don't feel like they have as much pressure on them? I mean, they collapsed under pressure late into the season, and then, you know, all of a sudden, oh, they're in the NIT, they're playing at home again. I mean, is that why they're playing better? Because everybody is turning it around here.
That's part of it. I mean, they're playing teams that didn't make the tournament that aren't as good, although I will say this year's NIT field is relatively deep. There are good teams here. I think there is less pressure because – last four or five games of the season, they're worried about if they're on the bubble, if they're not on the bubble. So I think that has kind of freed them up to just play basketball. Another thing I wanted to mention is Miami's shooting guard, Jacqueline Clayton, who was in Neil Connell Saturday night. I was rather excited to see him play. Our columnist, Phil Kegler, came specifically to see Jacqueline Clayton play, and he played horrible. I was crushed, horribly disappointed. He had 13 points, but most of those came late when it didn't matter. So Jacqueline Clayton, you did me wrong here.
All right, so they're one game away from Madison Square Garden in New York, right? Got
to
beat Penn State.
They have to beat Penn State in New York.
What do we think the chances are?
Yeah, I know the mic's over here. McCall and Deep, we're talking about potentially booking a plane ticket already to New York. But I think Penn State is a decent team, and I think it's going to be a tough game. I think it's actually going to be tougher than Miami for them. Miami's been a pretty bad road team all season long. I know they went to Providence and won, but they've been a pretty bad road team all season long. And I think Penn State is just a little bit more of a problem for UF. And I think that UF, going back to what Mike was saying, he gave a lot of good points for why they've done better, looked better in the NIT so far. But they were a very good home team during the season, and these are home games. You're playing, I don't care if it's the NIT, they're playing at home. I mean, it's the home crowd. And what was their record in the regular season, like 15-1 or something like that? They only lost one game.
They're 18-1 at home now. That ties a school record. They went 18-0 at home one year. I know this is the NIT, so it doesn't really count, but still.
Talk a little bit more about the environment at the arena. I mean, first of all, fan support, and then second of all, I know you felt like you were excluded from the outside world being in the NIT land in there. So talk a little bit about that.
Okay, well, first of all, for the Jacksonville game, there was a listed attendance of a little over 4,000, which couldn't possibly have been accurate because there was hardly anyone in the arena. I'm not sure if that was ticket sales or what. So it's back there. I think Kyler and Mike's point from the other day about the attendance. But, horrible support. And there weren't any tournament games going on during that first game, so I'm not sure why people didn't come, but I guess people don't really care about the NIT. Tonight, Miami was in town, Jack and Clinton was in town, and there was a lot better fan support. There was actually all a really good crowd. I want to say maybe 10,000 people, 8,000 or 9,000 people, and they were into the game. There was people who were more into this game than any of the NCAA tournament games that were on TV, and I couldn't believe it, but I know Kyle made a point about this before, that there are Florida fans that really don't care, I think, about anything other than Florida, right?
Yeah, I was talking about this with Deifer, because I've experienced this a lot of people I know, some of my friends' friends. There are people who, you know, you come to college, we're all sports fans, we've been sports fans for years, since we were 10 years old, or whatever the age is that you start following these things. But we all know kids who came to school, they never followed sports in their entire life, they couldn't tell you anything about the NBA, the NFL. But when they come here, you know, they kind of get into it. They go to all the games. They go to football every weekend. They go to the basketball games. And it's like they're learning the sport through their team. And their team is by far the most important thing to them. And Deifer wasn't believing me because he was saying there wouldn't be anybody at this Miami game. And I was saying, no, I think there will be, because Deifer thought they would be at home watching the real games, the NCAA tournament games. I said, no, they don't care about watching these NCAA tournament games that we get so excited for. They just want to see Florida play. Florida's in it. And it's the same people who fill out their brackets every year and they fill out their school winning, no matter how ridiculous it sounds. It's those kind of people.
More so than that, I think it's that they played Miami. If they played Providence tonight, I think you get half the attendance they had. I'm not going to get into my whole spiel about Florida basketball fans being awful, but they are awful. But it's that they're playing Miami, they're playing Florida State. Everybody knows Miami fans and Florida State fans. You want to kick them. You want to be on top. And if they're playing Miami, they're going to draw.
Yeah, but that's a good point as far as why it was so big. But my point was just against comparing people watching the tournament and people just going to the games. Like, I think there were a large contingent of people at that game who, had they not gone, like, had there been no NIT game, Florida NIT game today, they wouldn't have turned on their TVs and watched the NCAA tournament. They would have went out, went to a club, went to a bar, did their thing on a Friday night. It just would have been another Friday night for them. So that was more my point. There are people there who took the time out of their Friday night to go to the game where they wouldn't have clicked on the good games on TV.
And there were a decent amount of Miami fans there, so some people didn't make the trip up. My other huge glaring point that I want to make is that for some reason the O'Connell Center is in the nexus of the universe where the NCAA tournament does not exist, apparently. For whatever reason, the Florida Athletic Department has sabotaged anyone from ever knowing that the NCAA tournament exists. We got NIT score updates on the Jumbotrons and no NCAA tournament updates. And I couldn't believe it. Luckily, I had my laptop and I was checking the scores the entire game. But how can you justify doing that? Are we just going to pretend like these games aren't happening?
No, I'm sure it has to do with sponsorship and stuff like that. They don't want to chase people out of the arena with NCAA updates. It's like, oh man, these late games are so good. Get home and catch the end of it. Or, like, wishing they weren't there. They want people in the gym. They want people to come to the next game. So I think if they're hitting them up with how great the NCAA tournament is, you know, they might chase away some of the people they're counting on for money. So
is that what's happening, though? We're trying to, like, keep people involved in the NIT and not...
Well, the NIT is...
It's a rival tournament. I mean, they're competing for viewer interest and for ticket sales. So it's like two businesses competing. Right. They're not going to give... You know, I mean, Budweiser wouldn't run an ad for, like, another beer company. You know, it's not going
to
happen.
I might say they weren't competing for TV viewers, because as somebody who didn't go to either game, I actually was not able to see either one because I don't have what ESPNU.
ESPNU, which for some reason in Gainesville does not come as part of your HD package.
Yeah, so I mean, you can say that, but you know, the people, maybe they do come. Maybe more come when it's not on TV or something like that. And it's like you said, Kyle, that people do have such a high sense of, I don't know, school identity, school pride,
spirit,
like they,
school spirit,
the school spirit of college sports, man. That's what sets it apart.
Yeah. And I mean, there is something good to be said for that, despite the fact that maybe we, as you know, just more global sports fans, may not necessarily see it. People who grew up watching the NCAA tournament. But I think we're going to move on from basketball now. Talk real quick about the baseball team's recent play here. Kyle, give me an update on that.
All right, here's everything you need to know about Florida baseball in the last week. They started on Tuesday. They played a home game against rival FSU. Crowd turnout was a little weak for that game. Not really sure why, if anybody wants to.
St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, St. Patrick's Day.
There were a lot of green shirts that left. Yeah.
They had business to attend to, if you know what I'm saying. So, yeah, maybe St. Patrick's, it's a good point. St. Patrick's Day probably had something to do with that. But the FSU game was, suicide-inducing almost for me. It ended up being a really good game at the end, but it literally, I'm not making this up, I think it was 3 hours, 51 minutes was game time.
Yeah.
God bless any of you that went to the game and made it through 3:51, because if I was getting paid to cover the team, I would have left. That's unbelievable. I think there's a serious problem in college baseball that I'm kind of making light of, but they need to do something to speed up the games.
And it's a little ironic because that game went nearly 4 hours, and then all of a sudden you're out of the
Keaton Stadium tonight. Get to that in a second. But yeah, so in the FSU game, which actually turned out to be a pretty good game, it was 4-2 going into the ninth. UF was winning. They put in Patrick Keating, who's like their ace pitcher, usually a starter. He comes in to hopefully try to close out the game because Coach O'Sullivan said he thought his arm was a little bit tired, so they were using him out of the pen instead of in an extended starter's role. And FSU scores 2 runs on him and ties the game up. So all of a sudden, you know, Keating gives up 2 runs that he's not supposed to. Goes into the bottom of the ninth. And Buddy Monroe ends up hitting a single with the bases loaded, and I believe it was one out, bases loaded. They had intentionally walked Clayton Pisani in front of him to set up the double play, and he made them pay, hit a ball deep into the outfield that went over the drawn-in outfield. They went for the walk-off hit, big mosh pitch. That was big for them.
Yeah, that was his first 3-hit game of his career. He had a great night. I think he had 2 RBI. Anytime Florida State scored, they scored 2 runs in like the 4th inning and 2 in the ninth. Each time he answered with an RBI single in the next half inning. So Buddy Monroe had a great night. He actually ended up with a busted lip in the pileup afterward. Avery Barnes caught him with a left.
Yeah, it was funny because when he came into interviews, you could see his lip was a little torn up. And it looked like it could have been a cold sore maybe, not really sure. And he actually specifically said, he's like, oh no, this isn't a cold sore. Avery caught me with a mean left. So that was a little bit of a funny story. But yeah, Buddy Monroe's been really playing well. He swings the bat well. He plays pretty good defense. So I think O'Sullivan has found his everyday catcher from that merry-go-round he had going. And rightfully so, I think Buddy Monroe's really earned it. The next game was UCF on Wednesday night, the following night in Orlando, which Bobby Colovi, the other baseball writer, and I traveled to. UCF Stadium's really nice, by the way. It seats far less than the McKeithen Stadium, maybe like half as much. But as far as the facility, it was really nice. I thought their scoreboard was even nicer than UF's. It has a video scoreboard, and it has all the opposing teams' pictures even coming in. It was just really nice. I was very impressed. But they ended up winning that one much easier. It was a little bit of a blowout. The final score, I believe, was 7-3, I think was the final score. They were 7-2. Billy Bullock came in for the ninth, and he gave up a solo home run to their big power hitter, Brandon Romans, on UCF. It wasn't a big deal. They got out of UCF pretty quickly. They got a good start from freshman Anthony DeSclafani also. Took their time off, and they came back out today. They're one day off. Came back out today against Tennessee, a big home series in the SEC. The only SEC games they played were at Arkansas. They got swept, so this was big for them. And a great pitcher's matchup tonight. Jeff Barfield went for UF, a guy who you thought was going to be a closer coming into the season. Suddenly he's emerged as their most reliable starter. I don't know how, but Jeff Barfield really threw great today. And Chris, no, not Chris Hernandez, I'm sorry. Hernandez, and I'm totally blanking on his first name right now. I apologize, everybody out there. But Hernandez went for Tennessee, lefty. He threw a great game, big pitcher's duel. Barfield went 6 2/3. He struck out 9 and walked none.
Wow.
Yeah, and the guy's got a really good slider. He was just impressed me the whole night. It was a 2-0 game, and it was a 2-1 game in favor of Tennessee. Up until the 8th inning, Matt Dendecker hits a big 2-run home run with 2 outs in the bottom of the 8th that put them ahead 3-2. Big hit for him, really. Like the O'Sullivan always said at the beginning of the season, they need him to do well for them to win some games. He really delivered. And they were able to hold on. Hernandez went into the 8th. He was kind of a tough luck loser there. But great pitching matchup. And an extra pat on the back for them because the game only went 2 hours and 10 minutes, which was nearly half the time that the FSU game took. So I'm sure fans and reporters alike were happy about that.
I want to talk about the Dendecker home run a little bit because this game was on TV and during a commercial break of the NCAA tournament or something.
I accidentally saw it.
Yeah, I accidentally flipped over to Sun Sports, and I saw the home run, and he hit it, and it looked, first of all, like it went across Stadium Road. The thing was a shot. And then second of all, when he hit it, he sort of celebrated a little bit. All
right, couple things on this. Matt Dendecker, if you guys want to email me and we can start a pool on where he gets hit tomorrow by the pitchers, because I'll take back, somebody can take knee, somebody else can say they're going to go head hunting. But he hit an absolute bomb. It was a no-doubter. Took it across the street, across stadium. And as soon as he hit it, he throws the bat to the side, raises his arm in the air, does not leave the batter's box, or at least that clay cutout at home plate, until the ball's landed on the other side of the fence. Like, he just straight up watched his home run go out of the park. And I don't think it was really like a D-bag move by him. I think it was just, it was an emotional home run. They've had a lot of rough losses, and it was a huge hit. And he was just like, when you hit a ball like that, you know it's gone. Mm-hmm. And he just, I think, was so excited that was his honest reaction. At the same time, if they put one in his back tomorrow, I wouldn't be surprised or blame them for that.
Instead of taking back, I'm going to go with my strategy. Tennessee's going to employ it for the first time ever tomorrow. Everyone lays down or sits Indian style around the pitcher's mound and watches them strike out Matt Dendecker.
And then Matt Dendecker hits it inside the Parker because he rolls one to the wall that everyone's watching from their Indian style position.
All right, and they've got 2 more games this weekend, right?
Yeah, 2 more this weekend against Tennessee come out on Saturday. So tomorrow's game starting at 4. Starting at 4 instead of the normal 12 or 1 o'clock start time. And then Sunday's game is back to, I think, normal 12 or 1 o'clock start. So, the team's on a 3-game winning streak. They have a little bit of momentum going forward here. And, one thing I wanted to mention, too, about the baseball team is Stephen Locke, the pitcher who was – kicked off the team, for lack of a better word, at the beginning of the season for some DUI charges. I don't want to get into the specifics because I don't know exactly what they said happened. McCall, I think, does. We'll go into, you know what exactly.
Yeah, I'll tell you. He got arrested on a DUI charge, and then they had video evidence from the cruiser that did not back up the officer's statement that he was kind of wobbly and slurring and things like that. Locke said he told the officer, it's in the police report, that he had had 1, maybe 2 drinks, but he was a designated driver and that he was fine. So he didn't really fail any sobriety tests, and he wasn't visibly drunk, and that was kind of the basis for the report, so it got dismissed.
Yeah, and O'Sullivan was asked about it tonight, and he just said, we haven't really looked at it yet, and we'll make a decision on what to do. But I'll tell you what he didn't say, and that was, there's no way Stephen Locke's coming back. He kind of left the door open, and I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back, which kind of begs the issue, is that them admitting that they wrongfully kicked him off before?
It will be if they let him back on. I'm a big fan of, with the Carl Johnson thing with the football team with the restraining order, we talked about wait and let the facts come out.
Right.
And now it doesn't really seem as bad as it did then, and he's probably going to play this season. Same thing with Stephen Locke. You got to wait. You got to give these kids the time of day. I mean, they commit a lot of time to your program. You got to hear them out, let the evidence come out.
Yeah, I think they pulled the trigger a little bit.
Why is there more of a rush to justice with an athletic team than there is with the court of law? That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
It's all about public perception. I mean, fans and boosters don't want, some crazy DUI driver on the baseball team, even if he's not. So that's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, you can't blame the team for this because this is what they thought the charges were, right? Would you blame them for not taking into full evidence for kicking him off?
Well, no, but I mean, anybody can get arrested. But, I mean, you ought to see it go through the legal system and see if he's actually charged, because I think that's the difference. The charges didn't stick. They were dropped. So So he wasn't charged, he wasn't prosecuted because the evidence didn't match up, and I think that's where you gotta hold off a little bit. Even if you want to suspend him, like maybe you put him on suspension for even getting into any sort of tiff or spat, whatever you want to call it. But like, don't just remove him from the team and then put him back later. I don't think that's necessarily the right move.
Hey, you're absolutely right. You gotta suspend people. I mean, I could go down to GPD right now and file a report against you, and you'd have charges on you, even though they're completely false, and then you could get kicked off of something that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, like maybe suspend the guy because there's some stuff he obviously did something he wasn't supposed to be doing. I don't want to say obviously, but he probably did something he wasn't supposed to be doing. So, you know, put him on suspension, say, Steven, we got to wait and see what comes of this. But at least do that. Wait and see.
I mean,
what
there
comes
could be more problems also that we don't know about. But still, I just think you need to wait and let all the facts go away.
Yeah, and we'll do that. We'll find out more as we go along and keep you guys obviously updated in the paper and hopefully on this podcast. I just realized we completely forgot to talk about something in the basketball team. Big news at the end of the game that, Mike, you found out. Go ahead and tell us about that.
Yeah, Alan Chaney was not on the sideline for today's game, and we learned after the game that Billy Donovan suspended him for the rest of the season. Donovan said he was not going to really talk about what happened, that Chaney did not violate team rules, and that he wasn't really going to go into any detail about it. Chaney is still on the team, so we're going to have to see how this plays out, but no one really knows what happened, but he's done for the year. He won't be on the sideline against Penn State, and he won't go to New York if they would beat Penn State for the NIT.
Okay. I just want to update real quick before we move on to our final special ending segment here. The softball team has two really big series coming up. One against Tennessee this weekend starts today, Saturday, at 1 and 3:30. One of those games is on TV on Sun Sports. Then another game Sunday. They're the number 6 team in the country. The next weekend, their next series is against Alabama, the number 2 team in the country. Huge SEC weekend coming up for them, so definitely keep an eye out on that.
Yeah, if you follow one softball series this season, make it the Alabama series because they're a really good team, so at least check the score, see what they did, because that's a huge series for them. Yeah,
and I think even the players will admit that's what they've been looking forward to. So
yeah, last year it was LSU. This year it's Alabama, definitely.
All right, so yeah, so definitely keep an eye on that, but they'll start with Tennessee this weekend. All right, and rounding out the show here, we're going to talk, we got an email here from this guy, Vince Faniola, just a great email. We really appreciate any feedback we get, especially when it's an email like this.
And so, we promised we would read it on air, and that's what we're doing. Vincent was our first real feedback that we got, and we appreciate it, so Adam's going to break it down.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, he said, "What's up, guys? My biggest long shot is definitely the ETSU Bucks over Pitt, the first 16-1 in history. Here's why. ETSU has 3,000-point scores this year, and unlike the last 3 or 4 years, they made the tourney. They're always seeded as a 16 seed, and they always give the 1 seed a good close game. They match up really well with Pitt, and this is the first time they have had 3,000-point scores in the lineup. If they don't beat Pitt, they will at least give them a good run." I mean, first of all, that's just the first part of the email. That's great. Like, I did not see that coming at all. And there you go.
And he's from New York, dropping love on East Tennessee State. So it's not some kind of ECU homerish thing. Like,
right.
This is like real knowledge.
Yeah, I think his story, and I hope I don't get this wrong, Vince, is he went to UF, and now he works in New York.
I think
so seemingly no East Tennessee tie-in, which is very impressive.
Yeah. All right, and let's get on to the rest of it here. He says, "On a separate note, I have been a Gator all my life and just found your show a few weeks ago on iTunes. It's one of the best, if not the best, Gator sports talk shows out there. Keep up the good work." We cannot thank you enough for that, first of all. I mean, emails like this, you might just think, oh, I fired off an email in the middle of the day. This kind of stuff, I mean, really means a lot to us. Like, I got this email sitting in a class, like, you know, bored out of my mind, and this completely made my day. So we really appreciate all this kind of feedback
and
we get.
We often wonder if one, maybe two people are out there listening, and actually have someone from New York listening and send us an email.
Really cool. Yeah. So it makes it worth it, definitely.
And somebody who found us on iTunes, I mean, not somebody who's looking at us on the Alligator site or, you know, somebody here in Gainesville. So, yeah, that's great. And then going into the rest of the email, he said, "Also, one of you guys made an excellent point about who we scheduled to play in our out-of-conference games. It totally is the difference between you being a lock or on the bubble. Like you said about Tennessee, just by scheduling those games this year made them a lock, even though they only won 2 games against those opponents." And yeah, I mean, we all completely agree about that. Florida's out-of-conference schedule in men's basketball was a joke this year, and I mean, I feel like it hurt them come tournament time. So great email, Vince. Keep them coming, readers. Like you say, you know, we will read them on the show. We will respond to them. And for the most part, we are very appreciative of them. So
yeah, I mean, and it doesn't have to be if you think we're not doing something right. Those are just as valuable. You know, they may not make us feel quite as good, but at least we can make changes and we can react to stuff you guys like and don't like. If you really don't like something, you know, we'll try to adjust and we'll try to make it. Our goal is for people to listen to us. You know, we have this talk when the MacBook's not rolling. So the whole point of recording it, putting it on, giving you guys some sound is for you to listen to it. So let us know.
Yeah. All right. And something new we're going to debut, which we'd like a little bit of feedback on. We have this new awards segment we're going to do at the end of every show. Kyle, let's explain it to them.
Yeah, well, I got to credit this because I'm sure it's copyrighted. But my friend from back home, Andrew Ember, who attends FAU, and he hosts a sports show there. If you're ever interested in your FAU news, you can listen to it at, I believe it's Owl Radio on the internet. If you Google Owl Radio, you can go and check it out. And owlradio.fau.edu, I think is the exact URL.
Okay.
But he hosts a show called the Rush Hour Sports Report. It's a weekly show. I think it's every Thursday. And a segment that they do at the end is called something he calls Hat Tricks and Golden Sombreros. And what they do, since it's a weekly show, that each member of the show looks back on the week in sports and they pick a person or a city or an idea or an event in the sports realm that they give a hat trick to, meaning it was something good, they did something good, or they give a golden sombrero, which if you don't know what that is, that's 0 for 5 with 5 strikeouts in baseball. So they give the golden sombrero to somebody who did something particularly bad for that week. So what we're going to do, we like the idea so much that we're going to adopt it onto the show, but we're going to change up the name and we're gonna make it UF compatible. So Mike, what did we decide to name it?
Yeah, okay, we've got a couple of changes. I think you would have been really proud of us if you could have heard the brainstorming session. It was great. It all starts with Kyle Jackson, the beleaguered former safety of Florida. Instead of Golden Sombrero, we have the Kyle Jackson Bad Angle of the Week. Bad Angle accredited to Mike DeFordia. Nice work on that. The opposite of that, the hat trick, will be the Reggie Nelson Award for Excellence in Sport. I believe that was
in the field of sport.
In the field of sport. Yeah. For excellence in the field of sport.
There you go.
So I'll start it off with mine for this week. My Reggie Nelson Award for Excellence in the field of sport goes a little off the board here. The Seattle Sounders of the MLS. I've been trying to convince everyone.
A little
everyone.
Off the board?
I'm trying to get into MLS. I'm trying to get everyone in with me. Seattle Sounders are the team that I'm pledging my allegiance to, at least until the team comes to Florida or comes back to Florida. The Sounders played their first game of the night. They had a 3-0 win against the New York Red Bulls. Sold out the stadium, 32-something thousand. They've also sold 22,000 season tickets, more than any team in MLS history. They're outselling the Seattle Mariners right now, which is pretty incredible. And they've already been awarded. Seattle's already going to be the host city for the MLS Cup. They've got a couple of young stars. They brought over Freddie Lundberg from England. He played for Arsenal for 9 years. One of the greatest players in Arsenal history. I'm very excited about that. It's going to be fun to watch. Get on the bandwagon, Seattle Sounders today. My Kyle Jackson bad angle of the week is going to go to Gus Johnson, who I mentioned in my column last week. I love Gus Johnson, great commentator, but he was involved in an altercation at a Memphis restaurant last week on the eve of the Conference USA basketball tournament. I think he flew into Memphis kind of late, went onto Beale Street to get a bite to eat. He was unhappy with his service. A waitress flagged down a cop. The cop came into the restaurant. They were interviewing some people, and then they heard a crash in the back room, and it was Gus Johnson tackling the manager or somebody, and when they tried to pull him off, he wouldn't let go. Now, this showed a complete lack of composure to me for someone who, this is the one time of the year when Gus Johnson is in the spotlight. This is his moment to shine. It's his one shining moment, if you will.
Back-to-back one shining moment jokes and podcasts, by the way.
To see him fly off the handle at a restaurant was very disappointing to me. I would like to see better of that. It makes me think differently of Gus Johnson than I did before. So that's my Kyle Jackson bad angle.
All right, I'm going to contrast you immediately, and I'm going to give my Reggie Nelson Award for Excellence in the field of sport to Gus Johnson. Gus Johnson, to me, I love his lack of composure in a game. I love, you know, his emotion, especially when he's calling a game. I walk around the office and around my apartment here quoting his call of the Ohio State-Xavier game when Lewis made that last-second shot, which is great. I'm not going to do that on here because I'll break the podcast. The audio will go too loud here. But, yeah, I got to give it up to him. I mean, like, he makes me excited to watch some games, you know. We're always looking to see, like, oh, man, how's Gus going to add to this game? What's he going to add? You know, his excitement level makes me more excited. And it's great to see somebody who is just a fan of the game, who loves the sport and all that. So that's why I'm giving my first Reggie Nelson Award for Excellence in the field of sport to Gus Johnson. And moving on the negative side, I will give my Kyle Jackson bad angle of the week to CBS. Like we mentioned earlier, they did a great job in the overtime games tonight, Friday night. But throughout the day, they just switch games completely at random, as we discussed. You know, I don't care about UNC Radford. I want to see the game that's, you know, a 4-point game and could actually affect me. And, you know, I couldn't predict when they made the brackets. So I think those are my first awards. Defer, what do you have for us?
All right, well, my Reggie Nelson Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport this week goes to our friend and colleague, Phil Kegler. Phil has so generously offered up his home for us the last couple days to watch basketball.
Grandma Phil's.
We've affectionately nicknamed him Grandma Phil. He's just spoiled us rotten with ice cream and hot fudge and homemade cookies. And it couldn't have been any better. We're fat and happy, and we thank Phil for all of his generosity.
His roommate got us a discount on a deep dish pizza, yeah. Nachos, potato skins. What a night.
It's been one heck of a weekend. My Kyle Jackson bad angle of the week goes to the O'Connell Center for not showing scores of the NCAA tournament and pretending like it doesn't exist. This couldn't bother me more, so O'Connell Center, get your act together.
I'd just like to say before I move on to Kyle, to round out the show here, at the end of last week's epic, 100-minute podcast, we made a call for Mrs. Brackett for Phil, who proclaimed himself Mr. Brackett. Ladies, I mean, Phil's cooking. He's spoiling everybody. I'm just throwing that out there. All right, Kyle, round us up.
If you want to watch basketball for 10 hours on end and eat delicious chocolate treats, then Phil's your guy. But anyway, moving on. My Reggie Nelson Award for excellence in the field of sport is Ronald Moore, who's the point guard for Siena College. Perhaps you caught the double overtime thriller tonight, and you saw Ronald Moore hit not one, but two shots in the waning seconds of first overtime and then double overtime. The first shot tied the game up. Both of these extremely high pressure. Tied the game up, sent it into double overtime. The second shot gave them the win while they were down two. So it wasn't like he was taking a shot while the game was tied. Just two huge shots. Kenny Hausberg gets a lot of the publicity on that team. But Ronald Moore just stroked two huge threes, nothing but net. He's my award winner, no question. Then my Kyle Jackson bad angle of the week goes to all obligation and real-world activity that goes on during the NCAA tournament. It's really hard to deal with things while the NCAA tournament's going on, and I wish the outside world would just cease to exist. Because as much as we all like doing our jobs and stuff, it stinks when we have to pry ourselves away from the TV for a couple hours and go cover the NIT or a regular season college baseball game, stuff like that.
Or sign a lease.
Sign a lease. Go see your girlfriends. I mean, all kinds of things just get in the way. And it's just terrible. I wish we could just sit in the room and watch basketball for 10 hours with nothing else going on.
I mean, that's the dream, really. So. We're going to move on since, it's our final segment. It's a very special podcast here. I've enjoyed inviting you people into my home at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm sure Corey really appreciates it right now. But since it's so late, since it's such a special show, we're going to break it out with a special ending segment here. We're going to call it, What Can You Buy on TV at 3:13 a.m.? McCall has the remote in his hand. Give it to us, so Mike. All right, so we're turning on my TV here in my apartment.
We've got the Home Shopping Network coming up. We're notorious for these late-night podcasts, so this is going to be a regular thing.
All right. Yeah, like he said, we usually record these things after we produce the paper, which could be 1 in the morning. A lot of crazy stuff on TV here, HSN.
The winner is a Chi by Falchi Italian lambskin and snakeskin hobo with clutch. That's $119 you can get at the Home Shopping.
That is a steal. You can do 3 installments of $39.97, so they make it manageable
for
you.
This pink one's hideous, by the way.
I'm glad you only found the pink one hideous.
What's a hobo with clutch, first of all?
It's a type of, I'm ashamed that I know this. It's a type of wallet my girlfriend likes. They're actually, all right, you cannot be on going for this. They're extremely useful and handy. Most things that women use are ridiculously overpriced. They don't have enough pockets and zippers. Hobo clutches. Get yours today, Home Shopping.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know where to take it from there, so you know what? I'm just going to end it here at now 3:14 in the morning after you buy your incredibly useful hobo with clutch on the Home Shopping Network.
Snakeskin.
Snakeskin hobo with clutch.
Neon colors.
All right. Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to sports@alligator.org. We appreciate it all. And I guess with that, we're out.